Hi, welcome to the program. Hey, what are you looking at? Hey, my eyes are up here. Seriously?
The following program is brought to you in living color.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
It's freaky when you stare at my feet like that.
Whatever.
My eyes are up here. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. New and improved. Well, new, not improved. Not even new. Same old crap.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you? Happy Flag Day. What? Happy New Year, I mean, to you. Later on in the program, we're going to talk to a person, actual person, who is going to help us to stop smoking. If you still smoke, that's one of the big New Year's resolutions. Stop smoking, stop eating, stop breathing, stop having fun. Stop doing the things you love. That's it. So those of you that enjoy smoking, you really shouldn't be doing that. I know it's fun, it's a good time, most of us did that for a good portion of our lives, but we all have to quit in various ways. For the short span that I did the cold turkey thing. Yeah, I went to the delicatessen, and I bought like 2 pounds of cold deli meat turkey, and I ate that whenever I wanted to have a cigarette, and eventually I gained 3,000 pounds. I received nitrate poisoning from all the deli meat, but I didn't smoke anymore. That's called cold turkey, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, that's not real. That's part of my stand-up routine. Did you like my stand-up routine? Oh, come on. It wasn't so bad. It's funny. Get it? With the cold turkey? You know, with the cold turkey? And then... But I made a joke, and I said that I went to the deli and bought cold turkey. That's how I stopped smoking. Isn't that funny? Come on. Yeah, I know. Thank you very much. Yes, I made it up myself. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Well, I killed about 30 seconds with that. That's pretty cool. So later on in the program, an expert on how to stop smoking. There are various ways to do it. You can do it by the cold turkey method, which I refer to in a very pathetic joke. You can also do the patch. You buy the nicotine patch. When I did that, I administered it incorrectly. I put the patch over my mouth. I thought that was logical. If you have a patch over your mouth, you can't smoke anymore. But apparently, you're supposed to put the patch on your arm. That makes no sense. That's not where I don't put my cigarettes in my arm. Stupid people that made that stuff. Stupid. for a while, people were supposed to carry pictures of their young children around with them. And whenever you wanted a cigarette, you would look at the picture of your young child and realize if you smoked anymore, you may not be around to see your child grow up. That didn't stop a lot of people. I don't know. I have no idea why not. And then they started putting warnings on the side of cigarette packs. You know that. On the backs of the cigarette packs. Warning. All these kinds of horrible, horrible warnings. And it would, there was a different horrible warning on every single cigarette pack. So when I smoked cigarettes, I just went to the tobacco store and I just would choose the pack of cigarettes that had the one about, you know, it can complicate pregnancy. Because I figured I'm not going to get pregnant. I'm a guy. So I'll smoke that pack. I'll smoke the pack with that warning on it. So that didn't stop me, obviously. It was the cold turkey. I stopped cold ham is what I did. Oh, my God. When I start entertaining myself and nobody else finds it entertaining, you know you've gone too far. I am getting over my cold. Thank you for so many of your cards and letters and your many gifts and thousands of donations that top $7 million. I really appreciate that because that made the cold go away. I felt so much better when I knew that I was loved. By the way, one of my New Year's resolutions is to stay off of Facebook. I will no longer be a Facebook person. I do have 3 Facebook accounts, which I'm not supposed to have, but I'm special. Actually, 4 of them. And I will update them because for business reasons, it's important to do that. But I shall not participate in any personal conversations on Facebook anymore. If someone posts an opinion about something and I disagree with the opinion, I will not respond. Because I don't want, what do they call it, a string or a whatever. I don't want to go back and forth with people arguing with them on a computer. That's just, if I'm going to argue with somebody, it'll be face to face. And even then, I'll probably just walk away and say, I'm sorry, I don't do this anymore. You have your opinion, I have mine. Bye-bye. Call it a day. Have a good time. Enjoy. Go have a smoke or something. I will participate on Facebook if it's something of a humorous nature where it has nothing to do with opinions, it has nothing to do with any kind of anger, no politics. I would not do politics on Facebook anymore. I am just going to avoid. And, you know, it's not like I'm sticking my head in the sand. It's that it's more so that I find that one needs to put themselves above all of this. That's where you gain your pride and your respect of yourself is when you don't doggy paddle in the mud with the other people. That's where you go wrong. As soon as you start throwing your opinions around on that Facebook thing, you're playing in the mud with other people. Ron don't play in mud no more. That was one of his resolutions. The other was to drink more water. And then the third one was to pee all the time, because when you drink more water, you pee all the time. That's what I'm doing as we speak. That's a joke. I'm not doing it as we speak, because we're not speaking. Because I did have a cold, I'm a little drier than usual. Not in my humor. That stays the same. But otherwise, all right, too personal. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to have you here. The Northeast was hit by an incredible snowstorm. It caused a flooding in many communities that lived right on the ocean. I have a message for those of you that love the water so much that you insist on living on the ocean. It ain't going to get better. You don't have to believe in climate change, global warming, whatever you want to call it or not. The storms are getting more intense. The oceans and the seas are arising. That's a fact. You can poo-poo it all you want. It's a fact. It's a measured fact. The oceans are rising. If you have beachfront property, enjoy it while you can. Because as the storms become a bit more powerful every time, and we're always breaking records now, your house is going to float away. And if that doesn't happen, your flood insurance, if you live on the water, will become so unaffordable, you won't believe it. So, your choice. I prefer to look at pictures and videos of the ocean, or I get in my car and I drive to it. Of course, those of you who live in the Midwest, you don't have to worry about flooding, or do you? You've got your mighty Mississippi, you've got your big rivers, they will also flood, and your storms will get more powerful as well. So, I'm just saying, man, if I want to go to the water and enjoy a little bit of swimming or something like that during the summer, I'll get my car and I'll drive there. I'll splash some suntan lotion on my face and lie in the sand like I'm a breaded veal cutlet or something. And, you know, happy new year to me and happy new year to you. I hope everything's going well for you. Don't ever sit back and say, oh my goodness, the year's going horribly so far and all that, because then you're just being stupid. You're just being stupid when you do something like that. By the way, are you itching?
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, the podcast world's version of painful itching and swelling. You know they sell a cream for that, right? It's over the counter. Works really well. I've had to use it a lot.
Wrapped up like a douche. I swear that's what he says. I swear that's what he says. I don't care what you say. Those are the lyrics. Listen carefully. Wrapped up like a douche. That's what it says. The song. The people that sing it. Manfred Mann. He's rolled up like a douche. Listen.
Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche.
Wrapped up like a douche. There is no arguing. You heard it. I heard it. Manfred Mann said it. And I respect him for that. It's a great analogy. When you're blinded by the light, when someone's shining a flashlight in your eyes, my immediate reaction is, well, I feel like I'm rolled up like a douche, like I'm wrapped up like a douche. Get that flashlight out of my face. I'm tired of being wrapped up like a douche. Okay. Anyway, I played that little ditty, that little P. Diddy, because I have an appointment next week at my optometrist. I think I've talked about this before. About half a year ago, I canceled my appointment with my optometrist. And I don't want to diss optometrists because they're a fine profession. And there are many eye diseases that are quite serious that require continual monitoring and perhaps even medication and perhaps some surgical response, if that is even possible. But for most of us, as our eyesight starts to get a little weaker as we get older, I don't really understand why I'm going to the eye doctor so much. I'll tell you why. Because if I can still see okay, and that's fine, I don't understand what the doctor is going to do. Every time I go to the optometrist, which is different than any other doctor, by the way, they deal with something that makes me squeamish, and that's my eyes. I just, I need the eyes. The eyes are very good for me. That's the only way I can watch TV and know where I'm going. But I don't like my eyes played with. I've never worn contact lenses in my life because I can't get a piece of plastic that close to my eyes. I'll wear glasses every once in a while because I don't have to put the glasses in my eyes. But if there's an eyelash in my eye, I feel like I'm going to die. I feel like I'm wrapped up like a douche when that happens. Eyelashes are. I had an eyelash in my eye for 3 days not long ago. And I kept saying to myself, it will pass, it will wash itself out, it started to hurt, it started to irritate my eye. I don't think it was an eyelash. I think it was like an entire rope or something was in there. I couldn't see it. So it was lodged in there really, really well. And finally, one day, I cried. I just cried. I wasn't really sad. I just made believe I was sad because I'm an incredible actor. And lo and behold, and behold and lower, the eyelash came out. And it was on my cheek. And I took the eyelash and I wrapped it up like a douche, as a matter of fact. Wrapped up like a douche, another odor in the night. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. Love it. Love it. Should be the national anthem for this country at this point. Because I feel like I'm wrapped up like a douche right now, politically. Anyway, I got to go to the optometrist, the eye doctor, for those of you that can't say that big word. And I think I've told you before, my optometrist is extremely attractive. And it's a female as well. it's those two things together make it good. She's extremely attractive, and I'm kind of surprised that she's so attractive because I believe that in medical school, they should not give you a diploma if you're incredibly attractive. Incredibly attractive men and women should not be doctors because it's just wrong. It's just wrong. You don't want attractive people touching you because that's a tease. It's just a tease. But she's very attractive. And I don't know. I don't think she's coming on to me or anything, but sometimes during the eye examination, she'll put my head in a little brace and then she'll put her head very close to mine. And I really feel like she's going to kiss me. Because she's that close, but she doesn't. She doesn't. She has to restrain herself. She's a doctor, my God. And then she'll have me look forward, and she says, look into my eyes. And I'm saying, okay, I understand what you're trying to do here, but shouldn't we have dinner first? I don't say that out loud, but inside I'm saying that loud into me. It's very, very, very attractive, and she puts her head very close to mine when she's doing my eye examinations. The thing I hate most, I don't mind reading the eye chart, because when I get into the room, I try very quickly to memorize the letters on the wall before we start the examination, before I take my glasses off, which I don't wear all the time, and I guess I should, but I don't, because I don't need them. So I memorize the letters, and but only the ones that I can see. That's the problem. And I think she knows I'm memorizing the letters because I know them perfectly and then all of a sudden I don't. It's like, well, your eyesight just drops off automatically immediately even though it's the same letter. No, I just couldn't memorize the rest. I didn't have time. Okay. It's not a memory test, Ron. We're testing your eyes, not your memory here. If we were testing your memory, obviously you'd fail completely and every single time. The worst part about it, I don't even mind the eye drops because, you know, it's just like crying on purpose. But there's something that it's been like the past 10 years, it's been kind of new. I don't remember it before when my eyes were being checked. I put my head in this little kind of brace thing, like Dustin Hoffman in some kind of bizarre movie. Remember the Marathon? It was Marathon Man, I think it was. It was an awful, awful, excruciating movie. So I put my head in this brace, and she takes this machine, and it goes very close to my eye, and she says, okay, brace yourself, Ron. This is going to be very strange. And all of a sudden, this puff of air is blown into my eye. To me, it's not a puff of air. It's like a wind tunnel. It's like a poof, you know, and it scares me, and I jump, and I don't know why she's doing it. I've never asked her why she does it. I just assume it's to annoy me. That's my assumption to everything that I don't care for. It's just done to annoy me. And then she does it to the other eye. See, that's the problem with eyes. There's two of them. I guess one's a backup for the other just in case. I really don't know the reason that we have two. But The problem is whenever they test your eye, you know, it's going to happen to the other eye too. Whatever thing that was uncomfortable in the testing to one eye, the other eye is going to go through it as well. They both have to go through it. So when now I'm anticipating the blow of air into my eye, I wouldn't mind it if she took her luscious lips and just blew into my eye with her lips. I think I could handle that. But having a machine do it is so cold and so unnecessary. That's about it. I mean, and then it's over, and she always says the same thing. She says, all right, you know, your eyes are pretty much the same. Now go forth and multiply. I mean, that's about it. I was misdiagnosed once as far as my eyes are concerned. Are you interested in this at all? Do you care? I was misdiagnosed about 2 years ago. I went to the optometrist, and it was a guy, this thing. And he examined me, and he said, Ron, you got macular degeneration. And I said, I don't know what the fuck you're saying, but it doesn't sound good. And he said, no. And he says, and please don't curse at me like that anymore. I said, okay, you won't. He said, yeah. He says, we got to keep an eye on this. I'm going to give you a prescription for vitamins and stuff like that. And he said, why don't you come back, and in half a year, we're going to check it out. And I got all nervous about it. And I went back again half a year later, and there was a different optometrist. It was this lady, this girl. And I said, last time I was here, they said I had immaculate conception. She says, no, macular degeneration, she said. And she says, and I've just examined your eyes. You don't have that. I said, what? She said, no, you don't have it. I mean, you get older, your eyes, you know, start to go a little bit, but not at all, really, not too bad with you. She said, did you ever have an episode with your eyes at any point in your life? And I said, yeah, like when I was really young, when I was like 25 or something, I had this little fuzziness in one eye, and the doctor said that that would go away in about 6 months, and it did. And she says, oh, well, that's what he was looking at, you know, that. But you're fine. There's nothing wrong with your eyes. And I said, well, can you give me the name and address of that optometrist that told me that there was, so I can find him and beat the shit out of him? And she said, look, we don't operate like that. That's not the way. You don't take out your anger in that way. I said, you know, I wouldn't. I just was, you know, it's been a half a year of hell here, you know. And I guess I want to thank the other optometrist for pretty much ruining six months of my life and making me so nervous that I was going to go blind. But no big deal, no big deal, whatever. You know what the funny thing is when I tell you these little stories? It's whatever I go through, I'm pretty sure you've gone through it too. Or a similar situation in a different way. Because we always feel like we're the only ones that go through this stuff. We're the only ones that are upset by this stuff. We're the only ones that care about this stuff. Or that go through these trials and tribulations. But no, we all do. As long as we put them in our place and put those problems in their place, then we can sit back and we can talk about it and we can laugh about it. Because we're all the same. Except for me, I'm better than you. That was a joke. I'm not better than you. But I think I really am. Actually, we're all a club of people that think we're better than everybody else. And we are. Our guest will make us stop smoking immediately right after these words.
Hi, this is Gary Feldstentler, and I am one of the 14 people who regularly listen to the Ron Van Dam Show. I was thinking recently that it's probably about time that we all got together to celebrate our appreciation of Ron Van Dam, and that's why I'm hosting the first ever RonCon next weekend at the Fairview Motel and Asian Massage Parlor Center. This will be a great opportunity for us to talk about what we love about Ron, wear our favorite Ron Van Dam costumes, and hold panel discussions on things like, why are those RMV people so miserable? And why does the waitress always come over when you have food in your mouth? And why do people at the next table have to be talking about their health issues when I'm trying to enjoy an eggplant rollatini? I can neither confirm nor deny the rumors that Ron Van Dam himself will make an appearance at RonCon, but that would be nice, right? So I hope to see you all there next weekend at RonCon. Most of you probably have my phone number already, so if you can't make it, just give me a call. I could probably get the deposit back on the room if this isn't a good idea, but you know, can't hurt to try. I'm kind of lonely, like you.
Hello, Dr. Graham. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Ron?
I'm great, thank you. Dr. Amanda Graham is Senior Vice President of Innovations and a research investigator at the Truth Initiative Schroeder Institute and many, many other things as well. It would take like 15 minutes just to go through your credentials, so I won't do that right now. But anyway, we're talking about something that, talk about New Year's resolutions. This is always at the top of the list for certain people. And we're talking about finally getting out of the smoking world. And I guess percentage-wise, this is like happening all throughout the country number-wise, isn't it?
In terms of people who smoke or people who are thinking about quitting over the New Year's holiday?
Well, not only thinking about quitting, but remain successful. I mean, less and less people smoke, I've noticed.
That is true. Over time, we've seen great successes in the numbers of people who have been able to quit smoking successfully. Smoking rates are down at about 15% on average. But what that means is that there are still 35 million people who are struggling with tobacco addiction in this country.
Yeah. Is it an addiction or a disciplinary problem or both?
Absolutely. It is an addiction. This is probably the most important thing that we stress with smokers in understanding the first step towards quitting is really understanding the nature of the addiction. It's not about willpower. It's not about some mysterious character trait. Nicotine addiction, absolutely. Tobacco use, absolutely, is an addiction.
See, now, I could be wrong, and I always am, actually, but to me, there are two separate addictions to smoking. There's a social addiction, and there's the actual chemical addiction. Those that stop smoking, if they see somebody else smoking or they're near somebody in a social situation, they'll have one and then they'll walk away from it and maybe have to struggle a little bit. But the actual process of having that cigarette again was a social thing as opposed to a chemical thing because they were beyond the chemical addiction. Is that accurate?
That actually isn't accurate.
Uh-huh.
It's a common misconception.
See?
Nicotine in the brain actually changes the chemistry of the brain, and it changes decision-making. It changes thought patterns. Uh-huh. And so what we know is that even long after somebody has put down their last cigarette, and technically they're a non-smoker,
yes,
those thought patterns become pretty deeply ingrained
really?
In the brain, and what that means is that when you're around another smoker, when you're at a bar, when you're having a drink, when stress comes up, those same pathways get fired in the brain, and it creates a really intense craving to smoke months and even sometimes years after somebody has put down their last cigarette.
So once you start smoking, you're pretty much screwed. And I don't mean that in a horrible way, but I mean that's just a fact, is that you'll always have that urge because you were there before?
That actually is another misconception, and one that I think keeps many smokers from taking that first step.
Yeah.
You're not beholden to a life of cravings, but there is a journey ahead of most smokers.
Yeah.
And it takes really understanding what those triggers are, how to plan for them, having a plan in place, and recognizing that it may not always be an easy day, but to have coping strategies to fall back on.
All right, so what do we do? I mean, people that are successful, how did they become successful?
Well, the key to success is having a plan, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. We run a quit smoking program here at Truth Initiative called Become an X. You can access it at becomeanx.org. That has helped over 800,000 smokers on their quitting journey since we launched the website about 10 years ago. We developed the program in collaboration with experts at the Mayo Clinic Nicotine Dependence Center, basically taking the proven treatment strategies that we know are effective in helping smokers to quit and making them available on any kind of computer or mobile phone.
Okay.
And so I think the first step for most smokers is to really get connected with some kind of a treatment resource. Become an X has a number of tools and interactive exercises. We'll help you craft a personalized quit plan. We provide extensive text messaging and email support so that users get support on a mobile device throughout the day, not just around a quit date, which is when most people really feel like they need support, but weeks and months afterwards. And perhaps most unique to Become an X is our online community. And I can't stress enough the power of the online community. We've shown this in our federally funded research, and we see it in really powerful testimonials every single day. We have a large support community of thousands of users who are active around the clock, sharing their stories and advice. They celebrate each other throughout their quitting journey.
So
what we hear is that a lot of people come to Become an X not quite convinced that they're ready to quit, but reading the powerful stories and advice from other people helps them to feel prepared and confident.
Okay. So it's almost like Weight Watchers in the sense of bringing the community into it.
It's we call it crowdsourcing your quit. There is wisdom and experience available from literally people from all walks of life. And we've got a section on the homepage of the community called The Best of X.
Yeah.
They're posts that we've manually curated over the past 10 years that have gotten lots of views and lots of support. And what we encourage people is to come, browse. You don't have to post. You don't have to create a profile. But just to read the stories from other people and see what resonates with your personal experience.
I want to get political for just a second. Not political, social. Smoking to me is the one thing, one product in this country that has no benefits. It's awful and it shouldn't be around. And I guess in a democracy, you can't just stop a product, especially with the lobbying efforts of the tobacco companies. But if you compare it to alcoholism, there are many, many people who can have a glass of wine here and there, and it's perfectly okay. You can't have a cigarette here and there. That's never perfectly okay. I can't think of anything else that is just totally destructive, yet remains on the market.
You're absolutely right. We say pretty frequently that this is a product that, when used as intended, actually kills people. I think
I don't know.
That's a commonly accepted fact.
Yeah.
The most important thing for smokers to know is that there are resources available to quit. Understanding, again, why they smoke, why they took up the habit, the ways that it's infiltrated their life, and importantly, to start to put together a plan that works for them. And that's really why we created Become an X 10 years ago and why we've offered it as a free program.
And it's got a great success rate, I assume.
We do have a great success rate, and our research supports that, and the testimonials in the community make clear every day that this is a program that really helps to save lives.
Excellent. All right, how do people, again, get in touch? Because I think you're hitting a lot of people here.
The website is www.becomeanx, that's becomeanex.org. I'll also mention that we have a program that we've designed specifically for employers and health plans.
Oh, yeah.
We know that employers are thinking about how to be healthy in the new year, how to create a healthy company in 2018. And so we've taken really the core elements of the consumer-focused program and created a number of resources specifically for employers. And that's available at thexprogram.com.
Yeah. That's important because they pay for the health insurance, or at least a portion of it, and those rates go up because of that. So, yeah, that's true.
Yep.
All right. Thank you so much for... did you ever smoke, may I ask?
I have been fortunate to have never picked up a cigarette.
Good for you. Good for you. Okay. Then you can be a good example for me. Thank you so much for your time today, and have a great...
Thanks for the opportunity, Ron.
Pleasure. You take care now. Bye-bye.
Have a great holiday.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I don't think she liked the personal question too much. Anyway, I'm out of time for today. I'll be back again on the next weekday that we come across. Until then, I wish you peace, okay? Careful now. You be careful out there. You be careful.